Welcome to More Than Miles, a podcast created to look deep into what it means to be a runner and endurance athlete. Our episodes are filled with real stories from real runners, elite to the everyday athlete. We bring together healthcare providers, athletes, and dive deep into topics that matter most to runners. I'm Dr. Kate Mihevic-Edwards, physical therapist, author, athlete, and complete coffee addict.
And I'm Dr. Casey Sinders, physical therapist, athlete, and pun expert extraordinaire. We're so passionate about changing running culture to improve the health, wellness, and fulfillment of our endurance athlete community. And we hope that these conversations inspire you to focus on putting your health first so that performance and PRs can follow. Now let's get to the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to More Than Miles. Today's guest is Megan Featherston. She's a sports dietitian and the owner of Featherstone Nutrition. Megan works with runners every day, solving issues related to proper fueling, carbohydrates, nutrition, ferritin, and so much more. Not only is she an incredibly knowledgeable sports dietitian, she's also a talented runner with a recent marathon PR of 2:50.
You guys, Kate and I can just not get enough of these nutrition conversations. As physical therapists, we know this is so, so important and is a big piece of the injury puzzle for a lot of us. So we covered so much ground with Megan, and she really answered a ton of our questions related to fueling before, during, and after exercise, carb loading, caffeine, you name it, we talked about it. So this one is a great resource to keep saved on your phone. It busts a lot of myths that are out there and that are related to sports nutrition and fueling. So I hope you guys really enjoy this conversation as much as we did with Megan Featherston.
Hi, Megan.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. Like what we were talking about before we kind of started, a little bit frazzled because we were running around, but otherwise good.
What was that accent, Kate? Oh, we were a little bit frazzled.
Oh, I don't know, darling. It was probably because I was spent yesterday or Sunday all day with you, and you speak in your British accent all the time.
That's exactly what it was. You're right. Yes. But, yeah, we're a little frazzled, but we're good. We're staying hydrated because we're talking with a nutritionist today, right, Kate?
Yep. We want her to see us drinking water instead of coffee. Just kidding.
Is this something that we struggle with here, the hydration piece? I see heads nodding and other ones just cackling in laughter.
I think we drink a lot of coffee. I think we're pretty good about hydration, don't you?
I am personally not. No. It's really funny. I take care of so many aspects of my health and I'm like on it for everything, except for I get to lunch every day. I'm like, have I drank water today? Especially at work. At home, I'm a little bit better. Today I'm at home a little better, but treating patients, my mind is elsewhere, I must say.
It's a common problem.
I think it's gotten worse since COVID because we were wearing masks as patients a lot. So then you got out of the habit. I would drink water in between every patient prior to COVID and be really good and regimented about it. And I think I'm still pretty good, but I definitely think that COVID did change things for just my habits.
Oh my gosh, COVID changed everything. I feel like every question I asked every new client I had changed a little bit with COVID, because you're right. I'm like, can you stick a straw behind that mask and get something to drink? Can we buy a new water, bottle that has a straw? I think so many of our habits were totally wrecked. Yeah.
COVID. I'm surprised that it's taken this long. I mean, I feel like By now, I feel like we should be better again, but it's really taken a long time to recover from that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you guys, but we were still wearing masks. Gosh. I mean, even last school year, our kids still had them on, so it hasn't been, I don't know, it feels like forever ago, thank God, but.
I guess you're right. I mean, and we're still wearing masks intermittently. So I wasn't planning on asking you this question, but what kind of things have you seen change from like a nutritional standpoint or a hydration standpoint since COVID with your clients?
So one thing that was very unexpected to me was I was actually only doing this gig part-time before COVID. And once COVID hit, it ravagingly became a full-time job because so many people wanted to invest and spend time with their nutrition. I think at a time when so many things were out of our control, I think a lot of people felt like that was something I could still do for me, invest in me, better myself. Maybe races aren't happening, but if I can figure out my nutrition in the background and be the best, strongest runner I can be when I come back and they're here. So, I mean, I had just a crazy influx of clients. I remember thinking like, oh, I bet this person's going to cancel, you know, people that had scheduled before the shutdown. And I think I had like one or two maybe cancel that were like super bummed that Boston was canceled, you know, and things like that. But for the most part, I just saw people caring even more about nutrition and hydration than before, which was really cool to see.
And has that trend continued?
Yes, 100%. It has not slowed down.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a product of just like who I follow on Instagram, but I feel like there's so many great voices in nutrition out there, and you're definitely one of them. And it makes me so happy because it's a huge problem among runners. As you know, you're like really in the trenches with this, but I mean, and we'll get into some of this a little bit later, but I just want to take a minute to thank you for your voice on Instagram, because I think it's part of why people are starting to care.
Oh, I really appreciate that. And I think like at the end of the day, that's what's most important to me. Like I went into being a dietitian because I wanted to be in a quote unquote helper profession. My parents were both in healthcare. Like I wanted to do things. I was interested in health, but like I wanted to do something to help people in a non-nurse way, a non-physician way, and just kind of fell into nutrition. And I just, at the end of the day, I want people to have the resources that they need to help themselves, to fuel themselves the best that they possibly can. And I, you know, sometimes it's exhausting to continuously put out so much content and messaging and saying the same things a million different ways, but it's just good to hear you say that because it's like, all right, it's working. It's working. Don't stop.
Yeah. Please don't stop. It's 100%.
I won't.
And so, yeah, I mean, this was one of my questions actually, like how you got started in the nutrition field. Like, did you imagine you'd always be doing graham cracker taste testing, and videoing yourself eat toast every day? Did you imagine this or no?
You know, never. No. I mean, what you see is what you get. This is who I've always been. So I guess it's very authentic. It makes sense. But no, sometimes I wonder, I've got a 5 and a 7-year-old and I'm like, do they think like this is life right here? Mom's talking about toast again. You know, like,
I do love their cameos. They'll be like, is that good?
Yeah, they have something every day to share. You know, they don't always pop in, but they're like, oh, mom's on camera again. How many followers do you have now, mom? I'm like, how do you even know these things? Oh, it's crazy. But to answer your question, no, I honestly didn't. I started in clinical nutrition. I was very interested in medicine for a long time. I thought I wanted to be a pediatrician when I was younger. My mom was a nurse. My dad was a physician. You know, like I thought I wanted to kind of do that same type of thing. And I spent about 3 years in a neuro intensive care unit, like feeding people through tubes. I learned so much and it was a very cool experience, but I was like, this is not what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to help people be well. At around that same time, I started running and did everything wrong. And so I was like, all right, I've got to figure out like, how do I do this right? So I just dug into the research about why I felt so dizzy at the end of runs because I was only drinking water and not taking sodium, you know, wow, you are a heavy sweater, you know? So I kind of learned through myself at first. And then I was like, wow, people just don't know this information. And I was like, this is where I want to go. But again, like I am not a risk taker. If you put me in a casino, I will sit there and watch everybody else bet their money and I will not bet mine. Like I'm not a risk taker. So I stayed I was at the same hospital, but I was doing employee wellness. So I was creating like large scale wellness programs, educational classes. Like I got to create it and deliver it. Like it was wonderful. I think it was a great segue into what I'm doing now in my life, but it was just general wellness. It wasn't with running. So I kind of built up this running thing on the side for about 5 years before I took the plunge to do it full time over COVID. I should have taken the plunge way before that, but you know, my low risk taking traits, I just didn't do it. But I realized there was a huge need for this and I'm very passionate about it. And I think very driven to just constantly do new, big, better things. And it's working. It's great to work for yourself.
Yes, it is. But it can also be scary, right? And like you said, in terms of risk taking, mm-hmm. like going from a pretty stable job where someone else pays you to all of a sudden mm-hmm. you're in charge of your own paycheck and actually having to bring in money. And then, you know, in my case, other people's paychecks, mm-hmm. It can get a little dicey and you're like, oh man, okay, this is what I'm doing now. I'm a real, real boss or I'm an adult now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it never stops. Like yesterday was a holiday and my husband's a teacher. So he was taking care of the kids and they were like, why don't you ever get a day off, mom? And of course I could schedule one, but I'm like, there's stuff that needs done. And I'm like, I make time to be at your school parties. I always walk you to school, bring you home. I get to do all these things because I make my schedule, but then I got to work on President's Day, you know? So it comes with, you know, the territory, right? But I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah, I completely agree. I had the same thing. I walk my son to school every day. I will take turns picking him up. I always do bedtime. But yesterday I worked till 7 o'clock last night. And it was just like one of those things that if you love what you're doing and it's yours, then a lot of times that's what happens. And you get lost too. I don't know about you, but I kind of get lost in what I'm doing and excited about it.
Yeah. It never feels like work. Like never. I'm like, I need a couple more hours in this day. And sometimes that gets stressful because like the job's never done, you know?
Right.
But other than that, like it just never, it's just always fun. It's always rewarding. It's a good place to be. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your running story, like your athletic background and your running journey. And that way it might be able, we could tie it together with how you ended up doing, being a dietitian for runners.
Yeah. So I grew up playing sports, but I wasn't excellent by any means. Like I started playing soccer in third grade, you know, I tried volleyball in middle school and was terrible because I didn't like to wait for the ball to come to me. I wanted to run somewhere, you know, so I was like, okay, volleyball's not for me, even though I'm tall. So, you know, come high school, I decided I was going to play field hockey. Never held a stick in my life. I'm 5'11". I have no business playing field hockey, but I was like, this looks fun. So I showed up for tryouts and the unbeknownst to me, part of the tryout was running a timed 2 mile. I wasn't a runner. I never ran. They made us go out on the track. I thought I was going to die. It felt so hard, but somehow I came in third and they were like, you make varsity. If you can run, you made varsity. So all of a sudden I made varsity, never holding a field hockey stick in my life because I kind of had some endurance. And honestly, I really think the time 2 mile was like 1550 or like, it wasn't even like it was all that fast, right? For a freshman. So, but faster compared to the rest of the people on the team. So that's kind of where my running started. I was like, wait, I think I just have some just genetic endurance. Like I wasn't fast at first, but I've always just been able to kind of run, you know? So of course they tried to get me to come out for cross country. And I was like, I only run if I'm chasing a ball. Like I don't run for fun, you know, all that gig. And then fast forward.
Say that at some point.
Right?
And then here we are just running in circles.
Right? Like what in the world happened? I don't know. Well, I know what happened. It was after grad school. I felt like I had no goals, right? Like you're in school, you're in grad school. I had to study to become a dietitian, take the board exam. And all of a sudden it was just done. And I was working and I was like, this is it. Like we just work now. You know, I was like, this is not exciting. So somebody that was in my friend circle was training for the Cleveland Marathon. And he was like, come train with me. I was like, oh, we run through 20 degrees. Like I was like, I don't even have clothes. We went to Dick's and like got me some like winter running clothes. I had one winter running outfit. I like went through of all of Cleveland's winter that year. And I ran my first marathon and it was so hard, so hard. It hurt so bad. I barely broke 4 hours. And like I've seen dead people at the finish line because I took like one gel. I was like, oh, I can't believe people do this, but I was hooked. I was like, I can do better, you know? And that's where running started when I was 25 was the first marathon I ran. Yeah.
Wow. That's great. Your first race was a marathon.
Mm-hmm. It was. Yeah. First bib.
Oh, that's awesome. So then how did you transition from being a dietitian to being a dietitian that really focuses on working with athletes and runners? And I mean, I know you said a little bit about how you were looking into it for yourself, but tell us about that.
Mm-hmm. So when I transferred kind of into more of the wellness space and helping coach people towards just better wellness in their life, I think that's kind of where the switch really happened. You know, I gained a lot of skills on how to work with different people, different goals, different ages, different backgrounds, all that kind of stuff in both a group setting and one-on-one. But in the background of all of this, my running was starting to excel. So then people were reaching out to me on the side at work, like, hey, I want to run a marathon. I want to help with this. So I was able to get enough hours to sit to become a registered sports dietitian, which is another additional certification and test and all that kind of stuff. So I was able to get that while I was working through like some side gigs and things like that. And I just loved it. And I kind of got into, there weren't a ton of us specializing in running nutrition. So I had a lot of people referring to me. So I was doing a lot of after hours work to to try to keep both of these things afloat for a while. And at one point I'm just like, this is ridiculous. Like, I just need to go, you know, full hedge into this. But, you know, there was a need, I think, is the biggest thing. There was a need and I had the availability, and it was pretty much word of mouth at first. Like, yeah, I had a website, but it was really like, so-and-so worked with you and had success, so I sent this, you know, and that's really how it kind of grassroots exploded at first.
Oh, that's great.
So let's jump right into it. Let's go refueling for training. I kind of want to go pre-run, during run, post-run kind of order here. I know these are huge, huge topics, but I really, with this podcast, at least my vision of it was, I really wanted to talk about people who haven't really considered their fueling or what they should do around it. And so kind of going over some of those basics so people can start incorporating it into their training. So pre-run, someone's come to you, they're like, I don't eat before I run. What do you tell them?
Eat something. So then we'll figure out, like, when are we running? Right. Cause this changes things. Like, if we're running first thing in the morning, we need to be eating a simple carbohydrate that digests very quickly, empties from our stomach to fuel our body. Graham crackers. They just popped up on the screen.
For those of you listening.
I did. Did you see, I did a little dance. So graham crackers are my pre-run fuel of choice, cause I run first thing in the morning. But I mean, especially when we're running in the morning, we haven't eaten for 8, 10, 12 hours. So we need to be eating something before we head out there. It's a little more tricky if we're running midday or running in the afternoon. Typically we try to structure like a meal 3 to 4 hours before a run. And then also that quick digesting carbohydrate snack right before the run to really fuel it. So it kind of depends on what time of day we're running. But I'm a huge, huge, huge proponent about making sure that we're always fueling before we head out the door. There's just so much good research to show that if we give our body some fuel, not only are we going to perform better, but our mind is going to feel better and more focused while we're out there. We're not going to dig ourselves so deep in a deficit from an energy expenditure standpoint that we have trouble crawling out of it then later in the day, which is better for our hormonal makeup, faster recovery. You know, it's just a really good habit, no matter how many miles, no matter how fast or how slow we are, that we're eating something before we head out the door.
Yeah. And how does that differ between maybe a typical training day where you're going out, you know, let's say under 60 minutes for running versus maybe Saturday or Sunday when you're going to go out for your long run? How is that different in those two scenarios?
So I try to get people to think about like what works and then scale it up. So if we'll use graham crackers as an example, if we're having 2 graham crackers before an easy run, we scale that up to like 4 before a workout or like 6 before a long run. So we just kind of increase the amount of what's working. The caveat there is if we do a later long run. So I do have some people that wake up and then they're up for 3 hours before they're actually running. So for those people, I try to get them to actually eat a breakfast immediately and then do a quick digesting snack a little bit later. Cause what ends up happening is these people be like, I'm so hungry by the end of my run. Should I have taken more gels? It's like a very common question I get. And I'm like, well, what time did you start your run? And they'll be like 10:30. I'm like, when did you get up? 6. And we only had 2 graham crackers, you know, but you told me to eat graham crackers, Megan, you know? So of course there's all sorts of things we want to be thinking about. Like if we're getting out the door within an hour, that should be enough. But if we have 2, 3, 4 hours that pass by, we normally would have eaten a meal or two by the time our run's done. So we need to be thinking about that. And a lot of times we actually need to eat twice before some of those longer efforts if we're not heading out the door immediately.
Right.
So what do you do with someone who typically trains in the morning? So say, you know, they do their 2 graham crackers, whatever, they're doing their long run, but then they're running the Boston Marathon, and the Boston Marathon is in the middle of the day. So you start much. Yeah, you start later, but how do you train them to do that? And what kind of advice are you giving people for that situation?
So there's very few of us who are going to be able to execute an exact practice of that day in our long run. If we can, that's awesome, right? That would be ideal. But very few of us have the luxury of an entire day to be able to figure out when to fuel and, you know, running midday. So typically what I have people do is break it up, and what are they going to eat in the hotel before they leave? And again, it's going to be something bigger. It's probably going to have some protein or some fat in it, because we want that more sustained energy to get us to 9:30, 10, 10:30, 11, whatever time our start is. And then we take that snack that we're used to eating before our run on the bus. So we take our grams, we take our banana, we take our waffle, you know, whatever that is that we've been fueling with pre-run, and we have that snack. And then maybe we actually have another snack, right? It's all going to depend on like when we start. I work backwards with people. But yeah, we're going to have to eat a minimum of 2 times, maybe 3 times, you know, before that race starts, because otherwise we're going to be hungry on that start line. And that's not a good way to start a marathon.
No, it's not.
I remember my first Boston, not really planning for this very well, and like scrounging up a clip bar at the Athletes Village, which I think it worked out fine. It was fine. But at the same time, like, I'm like, I should have planned for this.
Yeah. Like, I think worked out fine. Yeah.
I definitely didn't plan for it. I definitely didn't plan for it my first Boston. And it was fine. Again, I was fine. But it wasn't, I was pretty tired, and I didn't try. That wasn't a big effort for me that day because we were just having fun. We told each other, I was running with my partner, just having fun, and it worked out okay. But yeah, I definitely didn't even think about those things. My first Boston Marathon, or even my first, I would say my first 4 marathons.
See, I remember the first Boston I ran, I was like laying on a yoga mat for like 2 hours in Athletes Village. This last time, we didn't even have time to pee. We were there for like 10 minutes. I was like, what happened? Like, how was I not here for our bus got lost and like super late on the, but it was still very odd. It was a very different experience this last year. I don't even think I would have had time to eat there if I hadn't eaten on the bus. It was crazy, but I don't know. You just got to prepare for everything, guys.
Oh gosh, that would stress me out.
Yeah. Yeah, that would stress me out too. But see, you were prepared. Your low risk self was had everything in order in case.
I did for sure.
So next, I want to go over fueling during a run. And I cannot tell you how many of my patients tell me that they don't eat anything while they run. Just not, oh, do you use gels? I'm like, yeah, of course I use gels. She's like, oh, they're like, I don't. Like, why not? And you know, at that point, like, I know it works for me and have had at least a decent amount of experience with it. But in terms of like getting someone to start taking fueling in, I know there's a lot of research about kind of like more is better at this point, or as much as you can tolerate is kind of the best from a performance perspective. But if someone has like never fueled before, how do they get started?
Yeah. I think we figure out like, what are you willing to take? And we start there, you know, is there a certain gel that looks good? Is there a certain flavor that looks good? Do you like chews versus a gel? Are you able to drink better than anything else? You know, we have so many options of fuel on race day now. It's honestly quite confusing at this point for a lot of people. So it's just like finding something or going to your local running store and getting a couple things and trying and seeing what works. And honestly, I just, first of all, try to get somebody to take a gel while they're out there, like just take it, you know, like I don't ever come out swinging. Like we need to be fueling with one gel every 30 minutes at the start line. You know, I think we have to kind of work with where people are and what they're willing to do. So first and foremost, get a gel, put it in your pocket, go on your run, take it while you're out there. Like, how did that go? Report back. Did you like it? Did you hate it? How'd you get it down? And then we can kind of build on that. If it went really well, then we can very easily probably get them to fuel every 30 to 40 minutes, you know? And then I think too, a lot of the work that I do trying to get people to fuel during their runs is like some myth busting and some strategizing as far as like things that happen out there. So a lot of people have GI issues and they're quick to blame a gel when really it's because they didn't drink and they were dehydrated, or they're salty sweaters and they don't eat enough salt in their daily diet, you know? So there's a lot of things that we have to play with. It's not always the gel that's the issue. So once they report back on how that one gel went, we can kind of play with it and figure out, you know, what do we need to do next? Do we focus on hydration or do we add more gels? Do we switch gels? Did that work? And just kind of starting early, like at least 8 to 10 weeks out from the race so that we have time to troubleshoot it.
Yeah. And so, that's why having someone like you to work with for, because you can hear how many pieces there are, right? And for someone who's never fueled before, like trying to do this experimentation on their own is so, so challenging.
It is. It is. And there's so many little things that we immediately be like, it's the gel. And it could have just been what you ate the night before, what you did the morning of, that you were underfueled, overfueled. Like there's just so many pieces, you know, so it can be hard. And, you know, I say that, but sometimes it's easy. Some people pick it up and they figure it out. But I guess if someone's listening that is having trouble, like there's an answer and we can get you all fueled out there. We just have to troubleshoot and figure it out.
What are some of the myths that come up? Like, what are some of the myth busting there's that you have to do?
It's usually the GI stuff. So like, I can't take this. I heard today, like, I can't take gels with fructose and all the gels have fructose because I have GI issues. So then it's taking that step back and educating that we have different transporters for carbohydrates in our small intestine, one's for fructose, one's for sucrose, you know, so we're purposefully adding a certain amount of fructose into these gels because our body can tolerate an absorption of a certain amount in that special transport system, you know, that it's actually there for a reason. And maybe the GI issues are, like I was saying, related to a very high fiber diet. I see that a lot. Like runners trying to be very, very healthy and just eating way too much fiber and just not being able to get through a run. So maybe it has nothing to do with that gel or the hydration piece, the sodium piece. So, you know, I think there's a lot of questions out there about fueling, and there's a lot of simple sugars are bad. I should be having something that doesn't raise my blood sugar, or so-and-so told me I need more. There's just a lot of contradicting thoughts out there right now about race day fueling. I should use real food, not engineered food, you know? So there's a lot of discussion here about like, what's the priority? Is it performance or is it just getting through a run? What is your health history like? You know, can we afford to not fuel as much out there, or can we absolutely not afford that for our health right now? You know? So there's lots of nuances in there.
Well, I loved one of your posts about how not to copy what other people are doing, because this is something that we struggle with in physical therapy all of the time, is the best bud on the run, or the person that you think is the best runner in the world, or and you idolize, that's the thing that the runner wants to emulate. So like, oh, you know, I hurt myself, my knee hurts, so I asked my friend and they told me to do this, and this is what I've been doing. Or I saw the Instagram of so-and-so and they also hurt their knees, so I'm doing this. And for us, that doesn't work at all. Almost, you know, any of the time, because it's so individualized. And even though it's a knee injury is not just a knee injury. It's so many other things. Like sometimes it's related to nutrition. You know what I mean? So it's like, if you don't have that conversation and you don't understand, it's just this information gets passed on and on to people and it's not correct information. And so your post about, I mean, that essentially, I loved it because I think that you're obviously seeing the same thing in your field.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%. And honestly, I think that's why I struggled on Instagram at first, like trying to figure out how to share content, because I understand that nutrition is so nuanced. Like if somebody gives you a black or white statement with nutrition, take that with a grain of salt. Nutrition is always gray, probably the same with you guys and treating the human body, you know, like it's never going to be this black or white scenario. So it's really hard sometimes to create education that a mass of people are going to all interpret a different way for themselves. So, you know, it can be like, I've put up posts where I was like, yeah, not going to do a post like that again. Like this was misconstrued this way, you know, and I try to think in every different angle of how somebody could use this or relate to this or misconstrue this, you know, and you just can't think like everyone out there can. So, you know, you just do your best and try to put out the most, you know, applicable content and hope that it helps the most people that you can.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The struggle is real. I do our social media for the clinic and I'm always evaluating all of these things as well. And you never want to be like, here are my top three exercises for knee pain, because they don't exist.
But that's what does the best on Instagram.
I know.
Not to say we're either of us are doing that, but do you know what I mean? That's the stuff that just blows up and you're just looking at it. You're like, seriously?
It's so true. And you're like, I'm glad you're looking at this, but maybe it's not for you.
Right. Right.
I know. My poor little dopamine system and all the likes.
Oh my God. It's so true. Well, your videos get lots of likes, Casey.
People like the vids.
I also like your, is this freaking true statements? Because that's how I feel about a lot of stuff. I mean, I just relate to what you're saying a lot of times and the fact that like, is this freaking true? No.
False. There was a real long string of false for a while. I was like, we got to get a true in here.
Where do you get that from? Is it from, so when you're working with your clients and you hear the same kind of things over and over and over again, and kind of finding those patterns, is that where you get a lot of your content mm-hmm. ideas from?
It is. It's where I get all of it. Like, I had this dream at one point in time of like having content done ahead of time, 2 weeks of content. Like, I will tell you right now, most of my content is made within like 1 hour to 24 hours of when I post it. And I have not gotten out of that groove. It was a goal for a while, but the more I think about it, when someone asks me a question or I continually see something on Instagram and I'm passionate about talking about that, like whatever I produce content-wise is so much more impactful. So I've just rolled with it. Like, I'm just going to wait. And when I of course have like a list of questions that have either come from the newsletter or clients, or when I posted on Instagram, I've gathered questions. So I have like a database to pull from, but also most of it is like something very real time that needs addressed.
Yeah. I love that. One question that I definitely have, and I know Casey has this question too, is about coffee and caffeine. Mostly because we're addicted to coffee, and so is most of the society, right? And it's something that, you know, I definitely like every single day. And when I was first running, which was a very long time ago, I used to have coffee right before every run because it just felt really good. I loved it. And it was not a lot. I couldn't have like a medium. It had to be a small. I had to have a very small amount, but I felt like I ran better anytime I had coffee. So what's the research around coffee and nutrition during exercise like?
And you're right. You probably did run better from having caffeine beforehand. So there's a lot of really robust research on caffeine and athletic performance. And I think, you know, before we hop into it, it's always important. There's 3 different genes for how we metabolize caffeine. So the majority of the population metabolizes caffeine in a way that it benefits performance. It makes us feel better. It makes us alert, makes us feel good, right? Like anybody who drinks coffee every morning and describes what you guys are saying, like you feel better, you feel more alert, you feel it's a great start to your day. Like you will benefit from caffeine performance, but there is a subset of people that don't notice a difference. And there's a very, very, very small subset of people that actually have a decrease in performance or they feel crummy when they drink caffeine. So like, I always like to start with that because if somebody's sitting out there and they're like, hear all these amazing things that caffeine can do from your performance, but have never felt that themselves, like that's true. Ignore us, right? And it's not a ton of people, but I think it's important to note. But for the rest of us that do benefit from caffeine, it can actually decrease our perceived exertion. So running doesn't feel as hard. Like we might actually be able to run a little bit faster and look down at our watch and be like, oh, wow, geez, you know, we also know that it's a central nervous stimulant. So we are more alert, like we're more into our run and focused on our run. So I don't know about you, but like, I don't think I could run in the morning at 4:45 without a cup of coffee. Like I'm not a morning person. Someday I hope I don't have to run at 4:45 to get my day figured out. But right now that's what it is. So, you know, I think it wakes you up enough that I'm not falling in every pothole I see, you know? So I think that's a piece. And then when we're looking at that mental performance piece on race day, it actually helps us stay more focused and alert and positive in the mile that we're in, which we all know how mental running is. Yeah. You know, if we can do something that keeps us more mentally focused and in a positive way, you know, caffeine can help with that. Obviously, like I said, it decreases our perception of pain. So if caffeine is peaking in our system towards the end of a race, we're going to tolerate the pain better. And then again, that pace should feel a little bit easier. So between the mental, the pain, and the perceived exertion, you know, those are the 3 big things that caffeine can help the majority of people with, whether it's just a day-to-day run or, you know, race day performance.
Well, Megan, I knew I liked you. But now I love you.
I'm like, people are like, do I have to stop my coffee? And I can't. Okay. I can think of a couple of people that I had stopped coffee because they were using it as an appetite suppressant instead of eating. Like, of course, that's not what we want to do. But like, if we're using caffeine literally as caffeine and still eating appropriately, I don't think there is anything wrong with including it, you know, in our daily lives.
Yeah. That's great news. Yeah.
Kids days made. What does this look like during a run? So when we look at the different gels, some that have caffeine, some that don't, this is honestly something I just started to pay attention to my last marathon cycle. And now that I'm experimenting with Morton gels, they have so much more caffeine in them. Their caffeinated gel has so much more caffeine in them than what I was using previously. And I've been playing with that a little bit because the first time my stomach said, no, that is too much caffeine.
Yes. So we already talked, I can't believe we're talking so much about my low risk profile here. I don't think I've ever told people that, but here we go again. When I first saw that there was 100 milligrams of caffeine in a Morton gel, I was like, no, this is going to be so bad. People are going to take too much. Everybody's going to be in the porta potty with GI issues. Race day anxiety is going to be through the roof. Like every like negative effect of caffeine, I was like, I can't believe they're doing this. Like I was just like shocked, right? Fast forward to playing with it personally with athletes, understanding how we're using it, how we're teaching people to use it. I have seen them be incredibly effective in people's performance, but I don't blame you. Like when I first saw it, I was like, that's a ton of caffeine. Like people need to make sure they're using this appropriately. But kind of segueing into the research shows we need a big hit of caffeine for it to help. Like these gels with 25 milligrams of caffeine really aren't doing that much unless we're taking like four within 45 minutes, which we're not doing, you know? So, you know, the research shows it's like 3 to 5 milligrams per kilogram of caffeine is what improves performance during a run. So for most people, that's 2 or 3 of the caffeinated Morton gels. I try to stick people to 2 again. I think like, let's not get too crazy here. I have not seen a ton of negative side effects unless people are overdoing it. So, you know, what you were saying, the GI stuff, like I was worried that it might bother people's GI tracts. And then also the race anxiety, like if somebody's already prone to that and they're sensitive to caffeine, I worry they're going to be like, oh my God. And I did have that happen to one person, but that's why we practice. I'm like, if you're going to take 100 milligram caffeinated gel, or there's a lot of others on the market that have like 75, I would consider that high too. We need to practice. I need you to take this in training at the beginning, so that you can kind of see if you like that feeling or not, because I don't know about you guys, but like, I feel it. It's like rockets. Like, wow. Okay. That hit, you know? So it's like, you got to make sure you like what that feels like when you're running.
Yeah, definitely in the experimental stage. And I think a lot of it was because I was reading about like what the research says. And I was like looking at my gels that had 25 to 40 milligrams. And I'm like, that isn't enough according to what the research says. Right. And so I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to go all Euro. I'm going to try the Morton gel.
I held out for a very long time too. Like I held out for like 2 years. I was like, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Now I'm like, I'm doing it. Order more.
Oh, that's what happens with anything good though, isn't it? I'm not usually an early adopter myself. I like people to prove it out before I try it.
I'm in that boat too. Yeah, I am. Yeah. I am. Here, you try it.
You try it. I'll watch. First, let me see what happens to you and if you crash and burn. And then if you're good, I'll do it.
That's so good. I love it. Yeah. The other thing on caffeine though, Casey, as you start to play with it, is it takes a solid hour for it to fully peak in our bloodstream. I mean, of course you're going to start to feel it, like it climbs there and then it hangs for like an hour. So I always recommend like for somebody who's running like a 3-hour marathon, you want to start in the start line so that it's hitting at an hour and hanging to 2 hours. And then if you want a second one, you take it at like an hour. So it hangs through the 3, or like do the math of whenever your finish time is and where you want it to hit. And the same thing with training, like we're not training as long as we're out there. So we may need to have that first gel be caffeinated if we truly want to feel what it feels like to have it in our system.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Yeah, that's helpful. Cause I'm trying to figure out, yeah, the timing of them. Cause I am a morning runner, but I don't usually drink coffee before a run. I like the bougie post run latte myself, but, yeah. So trying to figure out when to take them. Right. Because there's also a nuance of how long it takes to get absorbed and stuff like that. So that's very helpful. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But Megan, you didn't know they were coming on the podcast to give Casey training advice.
Oh, come on. You know, people have this question, Kate.
They do. That's why I was like, we got to make sure we talk about that. Otherwise you guys are going to have people asking you. Yeah.
I'm teasing. All right. So let's move into the after exercise or the post-run fueling. And so, again, this is another thing that can be a myth or not, and you can let us know what that is, like that time window of when we should actually fuel and what we should be fueling with after we run. So I always thought it was 30 minutes, 30 to 45 minutes, but tell us what the reality is and kind of what you should be doing.
We love to like bucket recommendations because it's easy to understand. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, you'll hear people say there's like a window from like 30 to 45 minutes in an hour, or you'll hear 2 hours, you know, you hear like a lot of different stuff about recovery. So there is lots of research on recovery. But I think the important thing to remember is recovery is twofold. So we often think like, oh, I need protein to recover because we've damaged our muscles. We've broken them down. We need to rebuild them back up in order to progress through our training, right? Or we're kind of like stalling out at some point or getting really sore and not able to keep up with our mileage. So protein recovers our muscles, which is absolutely true, but that's only part of the equation. The other part of the equation is carbohydrates. So we store carbohydrates as glycogen in our muscles and our liver, and we deplete those every time we run. So in order to fully be recovered, we also have to stock back up our glycogen stores. So from a recovery standpoint, it's protein for our muscles, but then carbs for those glycogen stores. So if you're a recreational runner who runs once a week, maybe the glycogen stores are not as important, right? But when we're in a training cycle where we are running back-to-back days or doing a high mileage for us week to week to week, if we're not repleting those glycogen stores, we end up feeling very flat, very exhausted, right? We can't keep up with training. We're like, how in the world am I supposed to run this again? You know, we just start to feel pretty crummy when we don't replace those glycogen stores. So there's those two pieces to recovery. So then that's where these windows get wonky because they both have kind of different windows. So this is, in my opinion, why we start to hear just random times all over the place of when we're supposed to recover. Because truthfully, especially as we get older, as we're over 40, like that recovery window for muscles starts to shorten. So you will see often that like if we're over 40, we should be having a full dose of protein for recovery within 30 to 45 minutes. I typically kind of tell people just within the hour, like the sooner the better. But if we can get a full dose of protein to recover within an hour after exercise, that would be, you know, ideal. Now, when we look at the carbohydrate piece, we can replete glycogen stores all day long. So we do have a little bit more of a finite window to really maximize that muscle protein synthesis, that recovery. But from a carb standpoint, like we can do it 24 hours a day. Like they've done great research showing us how we replete glycogen stores. Now, we can do it faster if we eat carbs in those closer windows. So it's like within an hour. And then again, within 2 hours, we kind of have, if think of it as like a sponge, right? We're going to absorb more of those carbs to replace that glycogen if we eat carbs closer to our workout. So it's never a bad idea to get carbs and protein within that hour after our workout. But if somebody, quote unquote, is only running once a day, right? If we're doing doubles, that's a different story. But if we're running about the same time every single day, we technically have 24 hours to restore that glycogen. So we just need to eat enough carbs every day, you know, and we should be okay. If we're struggling to recover, then yes, let's 100% make sure we're nailing the 1 hour and 2 hour carb windows to really replace those glycogen stores. But in my experience, as long as we're eating enough throughout the day, most people do okay. Not having quite such a, people get really bent out of shape about the windows. Yeah. And I try to get people to relax a little with them.
I mean, I don't know how we're runners. Of course we get bent out of shape about the windows.
True story.
I need to know exactly.
I want to know exactly what time to do this and how many minutes I have before I can't do it.
These are my people.
Mine too.
I went out to dinner with a group of moms. I'm totally digressing. The other day, and none of them are like in my running bubble. And like, this is what I do all day. I work with people like this, you know, all of us that some might call crazy, but it's normal to us. And it's, I'm like, oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Other people live very different lives than we do.
They're less, I think other people live less regimented lives.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's something very comforting with the schedule and consistency and knowing the boundaries and the rules.
And do you think that's why we're good runners? Or do you think we're runners because we like structure? I don't know, like chicken or the egg.
This is a very difficult question. Yeah. I think it's a little bit of both. I think that you find, when you find running and you have these tendencies, you like feel like you've found home.
So sentimental.
I know.
I'm home.
I'm home now. These people understand me.
Right.
I mean, I think it can be to a detriment, though. I mean,
yes,
think of the type A and perfectionism and all that stuff. Like, I mean, gosh, I know some really good runners who eat, like, you know, Oreos and ramen, and they're like chill on the start line, and they run, you know,
it's like. True.
So I think it can go both ways, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think we need to find a healthy balance there, which, you know, we could argue about if balance is a myth as well. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I do think running lends it to people who like schedules, like having goals, like having mm-hmm. some sort of method to the madness.
I was going to add the madness if you didn't. Yeah. So.
Well, and I would also like to mention that trail runners typically mm-hmm. tend to be super chill.
Yeah, they'll run in the woods with like a pizza box under their arm. I know. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. It is incredible. So, I mean, I agree with you. You know, I agree with you because we have this conversation all the time, Casey. So what you said, I completely agree with, but I do also think there's comfort in some kind of structure, but we digress.
Right. I'm sorry. I would totally threw that for a loop.
Okay, no, I love that.
I think it's all valid. Again, I think it's all valid. It's
true. So, I mean, as physical therapists, I've alluded to this a few times. I hear all kinds of like red flags in my brain, like you need to work with someone. But from you, coming from your side, what are some things that we could listen out for, or any healthcare providers who are listening can listen out for, who would benefit to being referred out to a sports dietitian?
Yeah, I think I have a lot of different kind of buckets that I could probably classify people who I work with in. For some people, it's performance. They have ticked off every other box and they have not focused in on nutrition yet. Like, honestly, most people have reeled in every piece of their training except nutrition very, very frequently. So I have that kind of in one corner. And then another is when we don't know enough about our own nutrition, or we don't trust ourselves enough about our own nutrition, and it's doing harm to our overall health. So I would say I see that a lot, right? Whether it's intentionally underfueling or unintentionally underfueling, just a lack of education on what my body, I'm demanding that my body do, and not providing it with the energy. And I would say it cascades into some of the red flags that you're talking about, like recurrent stress fractures or even recurrent soft tissue injuries, I see are related to nutrition a lot. I'm sure you do too. Really bad blood work, right? Like some really blaring deficiencies that, you know, need some extra attention. And then, of course, any type of history with disordered eating, you know, I think that to our earlier points, that the personality that excels with distance running often also has tendencies towards disordered eating. You know, I think I'm pulling this statistic out of the people I have worked with, but maybe not a diagnosed eating disorder, but some sort of disordered eating in their past is probably at least 80%. Of runners, you know, and maybe it's that high in the general population. And it's just that's not who I work with, but it is huge. So I think, you know, that's one thing I'm always very sensitive with messaging, to understand that is an underlying theme here. So to kind of answer your question, it would be some of those recurrent injuries. It would be the way they're talking about their body or their food, or restrictive tendencies, or a desire to improve their performance and really kind of hone in and learn more about their nutrition or lack of knowledge in that space.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I do want to expound on the eating disorder piece a little bit, because I personally have struggled with one in the past, and it's still kind of a maintenance sort of thing for me mm-hmm. and something I kind of will likely deal with on an ongoing basis. And I've always been, and part of it was because I had a big interest in nutrition. But I always think about this for myself. If I were to go and want to work with a sports dietitian, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're going to make me measure everything. I'm going to have to write everything down. And for me, that's extremely triggering. And I know I can't do that. Mm-hmm. So from your perspective, if you did happen to work with someone with that, how would you navigate that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So luckily that's something that, you know, I start out conversations with everybody that people seem pretty comfortable. Usually that just comes out somewhere in the conversation, you know, as I'm gathering information about them, they're luckily trusting enough to share that I have had a history with this or an over obsession with macro counting, maybe not, you know, and just kind of sharing with their history with nutrition. So then in that, I always ask, I'm like, what are you comfortable with? This is how I work with my clients. What here doesn't feel good to you? Are numbers triggering? Do you want me to leave numbers off your plan? You know, this is how I like to track with people, which is literally like, I had a PB&J for lunch, no measuring, no, you know, but for some people, to your point, maybe that still would be triggering if they have a past history of tracking. So it's always a conversation and we just adjust and we adapt to what that specific person needs to make sure that they're continuing to heal some of this disorder. Because that's what they're coming to me for, right? Is like, okay, so I had this history with eating. I know I need to be here, but I'm here and I can't figure out how to get here. So get me there, you know? So we don't want to do anything that would backslide that by any means. So it's really just individual person by person basis of what do you need to be successful here?
Right. I think the last big topic I want to talk about is carb loading. Mm-hmm. And I'd be honest, I did dabble on the calculator on your website and I was astonished at how many carbs it was. And I'm like, okay, I've never done this. I thought that I had done it in the past. I'm like, I've never truly carb loaded my entire life. Been doing this over, you know, 12 years now. So this is not the same as just having a pasta party with your cross-country teammates, it turns out. Why is carb loading important? Why is having some sort of scientific background to it important? Give us a little bit of a lowdown on carb loading.
So we know that we have a very finite store of carbohydrates to pull from during exercise. So, you know, if we're generalizing across the population, we maybe have 14 miles of glycogen stores in our body. So come marathon day, that's not going to cut it, right? So when we're really looking at performance, so I always say, like, if we're hobby jogging a marathon with a friend, do we need to carb load? Probably not. You could, you'd feel better if you did, but you probably don't need to. You know, when I look at carb loading, it is because we are trying to get the most out of our performance and hold that marathon pace that seems ludicrous on paper, but our coach tells us we can do it, right? That's the type of performance that's going to benefit from a full carb load. So it's because the higher intensity we're exercising at, the more carbohydrates we torch for fuel. So we know that we can't store full carbohydrates for a marathon distance. And we know we can only get so many carbs in through gels. So the goal would be when we cross that finish line, we have not completely exhausted our glycogen stores or the carbs that we're getting through our gels. So throughout the whole race, we want to be using both of those. And like ideally, right, as we're that last step, okay, there's that last gram of glycogen, right? We don't want to run out before then. So if we can fully load those glycogen stores and fuel early and often with enough carbohydrates, then we can keep pace until the end of our race. So if we pace appropriately for our fitness level, that carbohydrate availability from gels and glycogen is going to allow us to hold that pace till the very, very end and not hit that wall.
That's a great explanation. And that's one of the best carb loading explanations I've heard. Thank you.
Can you tell I've had to sell a few people on this?
I'm sure you have. No, that's great. I think that's going to be very beneficial for people to hear.
Good.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. We are definitely butting up against this hour mark. So I just want to say thank you for coming on the show with us. We have been really excited to have you. We're so glad you're here and you were great. I loved everything that you were talking about and how you were explaining everything. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. I love to continue to get the nutrition word out there. So thanks for allowing me to talk to your audience.
Yeah, thanks, man. I learned a lot. So I'm excited about, I'm going to re-listen to this one and talk to my patients about it.
Good. And thank you for being advocates for nutrition with your patients.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the time.
Sure.
Thank you so much for listening today. We are so happy that you're here. If you enjoyed this conversation, share it with a friend. Even better, share it on social media, because sharing is caring. And the more people we can reach, the better.
Another way you can help us out is by leaving a review on Spotify or Apple Podcast. So give us those 5 stars and tell us how awesome we are. Really, we love to hear how awesome we are. To support our work financially, you can also join our Patreon squad at patreon.com/morethanmiles, where for a few dollars a month, you can help us keep the show going and growing.
This season is sponsored by Fast Bananas. Why buy multiple subscriptions made for everyone when you can have one specifically crafted for runners? Fast Bananas has online yoga classes, strength training programs, meditations, recipes, communities to ask questions, and so much more. Check out Fast Bananas at fastbananas.com or follow them on Instagram at fastbananasrun.
Don't forget that training is so much more than miles.